Chapter 19. The Marketplace. "Stavius, is that you?" rang a sweet woman's voice from behind, accompanied by an almost uncontrollable urge for Stavius to turn around. It was Larsa, and Stavius knew she was very aware of his identity and that she was also broadcasting his intense desire to reply. He pretended not to hear her, put his head down, and trotted across the street. He didn't want Larsa to know that he was aware of her presence. A plan began to form as Stavius jogged back up the hill they had come down earlier. He turned left at the next crossroads in an attempt to lose her in Milltown. Milltown was a densely populated, low-lying area between the Admian and Ringheld castles. It was the place where most of the city's workers lived and consisted of one, two, and sometimes three-story apartment buildings and budget shops crammed together in a deep valley. The roads were narrow and the crowds were growing as people began emerging from their midday siestas. Stavius saw them jostling down the street, avoiding puddles, but staying dry as the rain was magically diverted around their bodies, and he wished for magical abilities like that for the millionth time. Stavius darted left down a side street and broke into a run. He turned right down a narrow lane and dashed three more blocks. He then slipped into a narrow alley between two low buildings and peered out while he caught his breath. A mere minute or two later, he saw Larsa jogging down the street and stopping in front of the fence. Stavius drew back into the shadows, and although he could see Larsa peering through the gap in the fence, she apparently couldn't see him. She stepped back, banged the wall with her fist, and muttered something he couldn't understand. Then she charged off around the building, and Stavius realized he was trapped. The alley was an excellent hiding and spying place, but there was only one entrance into a very confined space. He looked around and realized that the only way out was up. Stavius chimneyed up the walls of the two buildings and clambered onto the roof of the one on his right. It had a flat terrace on top with a small table and a few chairs for the owners to get some fresh evening air. No one was home now, although Stavius could hear someone banging on the building's back door. He wondered how she could know where he was for a moment until he heard glass shatter and knew she was breaking in to get him. He ran across the building and onto the roofs of the two neighboring houses. There was another alley past the third building. It was a little wider than the one Stavius had shimmied up, but he knew he could jump it. He sprinted over the final roof and leaped across the alley. He cleared the distance, but was trembling from the experience, and sat to catch his breath and steady his nerves for a minute. The roofs were getting slippery from the rain, and he knew he had to find another route. Stavius looked up and saw Larsa running across the roofs towards him. She saw him and shouted, "Stavius, wait, I just want to talk to you!" But Stavius knew that anyone willing to exert this amount of effort stalking and chasing him wanted far more than conversation. He stood up and ran to the far side of the building. He was on another house's terrace, which had an outside set of stairs descending to the street. He glanced back to see Larsa ranting on the far rooftop. The alley was too broad for her to jump, and she was going to have to backtrack to find a way down. Stavius continued down the stairs and ran along the side street toward the main road. He was running away from where he needed to go this afternoon, but Stavius knew that he must lose Larsa first. He might have gained a few minutes of lead on her, but she somehow knew how to find him. He had to find a way to get enough time to figure out how she was tracking him, and that wasn't going to happen as long as he continued to jump from roof to roof. Stavius reached the main road, turned left towards the river, and froze. There in front of him was the most massive structure he had ever seen in his life. Its architecture was similar to the Admian Tree Castle, but it was many times larger. This must be the new marketplace the Admians and Ringhelds had been building. The tree structure was hundreds of feet tall, rising out of a trunk situated in the corner of an expanse vast enough to easily fit 6 football fields. The branches were cantilevered over the entire area and contained pods resembling leaves to shade the marketplace below. Stephen had heard rumors that these bunches of leaves were actually residences and offices for the wealthy friends of the Admians and Ringhelds, but he had never believed those tales. He had thought that no building could be that large. Now those stories seemed very plausible. The whole structure was built to resemble a gigantic windswept tree and was supported by a massive flow of magical energy. There was absolutely no way anything that size could span such an incredible distance all in one direction without magical support. The more compelling aspect to Stavius at the moment, though, was the tall construction fence that encircled the entire area. It was built to keep curious onlookers out, but did have a few gaps which Stavius could tell were merely illusions. He slipped through one of these hidden gaps and hoped that Larsa was not able to see through illusions. The sheer size of the place should give him a little breathing room to think before she found a way in. He ran across the construction site to the structure's trunk. There was still a lot of construction needed before it would be ready to open, but Stavius could tell that the central pillar was, in fact, designed to be a sort of mall of shops. He climbed the broad, circular staircase in the middle of the trunk and walked out onto the open floor. No workers were around today, and Stavius assumed that they were being used to prepare for Lunafest instead. He had barely sat down when he saw Larsa pacing around the perimeter of the site. She now looked more like an animal prowling than a woman searching for a friend, and a shiver went up Stavius's spine. How could she be following him? She knew where he was, even when she couldn't see him. She seemed much too far away to be using smell. She had to be using some sort of magical tracking device. Stavius's eyes flashed wide as he thrust his hand in his pocket and pulled out the calling card Larsa had handed him at the Traveler's Den. He saw the names of her Clothen and Septumculus offices with the little compass arrows on it, and noticed numbers below the compasses. Stavius's Earth memories made him think that these were addresses, but he also knew that no one used addresses on Mirth, and besides, they were just numbers. There were no street names. Stavius looked out at the increasing downpour and was glad he had a roof over his head for the moment. He could no longer see all the way across the construction site and did not know where Larsa was standing. He hoped she had taken shelter until the rain ended as he paced in circles around the third floor of the mall. He looked at the card again and froze. The arrows seemed different. Stavius slowly walked in a small circle while staring at the card. Bang! He kicked a bucket, spilling some sort of viscous muddy water and stubbing his toe. Ow! He shouted in pain, but he was still staring at the card in newfound understanding. The arrows moved as he moved, and he guessed that they always pointed towards the two shops. He also speculated that the numbers below them were some sort of distance measurements, probably paces. His hands were shaking as he turned over the card to the side containing Larsa's name. The number below her compass was much smaller than the numbers on the other side of the card, and the arrow was moving. Stavius saw it rapidly swing from left to right and suspected that it was pointing toward Larsa checking for hidden breaks along the far fence. He also theorized that she might know the card's location if this card knew hers. The arrow stopped moving just as he had this epiphany, and Stavius thought that perhaps she had found shelter and decided to wait out the storm. Then he realized that, although the arrow was no longer moving, the number below it was rapidly decreasing. Larsa had found a way through the fence and was running straight toward him. Stavius should have just dropped the card in the bucket of mud or thrown it off the edge to get rid of Larsa's ability to track him. Instead, he stuffed it back in his pocket and raced down the stairs. Moments later, he was standing outside in the torrential rain as lightning crashed all around, realizing that he couldn't see the fence well enough to find a gap. He was trapped, and Larsa would reach him at any minute. Stavius's only option was to use the only magical ability he could perform. He decided to blast a hole in the fence. Stavius concentrated as hard as he could on building a power blast until he felt his entire body crackling with energy. Then he braced his back legs, stepped forward with his right, and thrust both arms in front of him. A bolt of energy erupted from his hands and blasted a hole in the fence. Unfortunately, had Stavius been better trained in using this skill, he would have known to be very careful using it in a powerful energy well. Septumculus was built upon one of the most potent power flows in the world, and this enormous tree structure was utilizing vast quantities of that magical energy to remain standing. The results were that Stavius's blast was far more forceful than he had expected, and that he was unable to target his charge accurately. In fact, most of the energy he discharged was entirely out of his control and angled towards the most robust energy flow, which was through the tree building. Stavius glanced back looking for Larsa as he scrambled through the hole in the fence and was horrified. His blast had left a 50-foot-wide scorch mark on the new building. The alabaster-white structure, it was not yet alluded to look like a tree trunk, was blackened where the energy had bolted struck, and it appeared to be crumbling. Loud creaking and cracking sounds began emanating from the structure as the blackened area continued to spread, and Stavius turned and ran. He charged down the alley and crashed into a woman who was running down the main road. They both went tumbling into the mud, and Stavius froze in terror when he saw her bright yellow backpack fly off her shoulder. He had just knocked over a messenger and was now in deep trouble. Messengers were used by the very wealthy to rapidly send small packages and communications back and forth. They were naturally quick, long-distance runners who were magically enhanced for speed and endurance. They were trusted to arrive at their destination as quickly as possible without ever stopping or opening their packages. They were easily identifiable by their bright yellow backpacks, and interfering with their deliveries was punishable by death. Stavius raced over to retrieve her backpack and began to apologize, but the woman wasn't paying any attention to him. She was staring at the building and saying, "Holy Mars, it's going to fall!" Stavius spun around and stared at the building as well. The damaged area had spread up past the third floor, although it didn't appear singed like the place where Stavius's blast had struck. It looked like wooden poles tied together with mud smeared over them. The explosion had disrupted the magical enhancements of the building, and it was reverting back to its natural, primitive building materials. Suddenly, an explosive crack rang out through the entire area, and the tree building shuddered. The base had broken, and the building began to sway over the construction yard. It started to fall so slowly that it was almost graceful, but it quickly gathered speed as the massive, overhanging limbs snapped the trunk and fell. The ground shook across all of Milltown when the structure hit. It felt as though there had been an earthquake. Cracks appeared in houses, a few other buildings collapsed, and Stavius and the messenger were thrown off their feet again. Everyone in Milltown sat where they fell for a few moments, while their minds tried to absorb what had just occurred. "I'll take that, please," came a shaken voice from beside Stavius. He looked over to see the messenger and realized he was still holding her backpack. "I'm sorry, I was just picking this up for you," he apologized as he stood to return it to her. He slipped Lars's card into a side pocket of the backpack as he rose. "I am so sorry to have run into you. It was an accident. Please don't report me." "I think this can be considered an extenuating circumstance," said the woman as she took the backpack. "Did you see what happened when lightning struck the new marketplace? We all said something like that was going to happen. These architects pushed their abilities too far. I just hope no one was hurt. Bye." The messenger dashed off faster than Stavius had ever seen anyone run, while he trotted in the opposite direction along a side street back up the hill. Larsa would still be looking for him if she had escaped the building collapse. He hoped she would chase the card for a while, but his ruse wouldn't work if she actually saw him. Stavius ran as far as he could, but soon had to slow to a walk. He was out of breath, muddy, and bruised. His foot was throbbing from kicking that bucket of mud, and he had banged his hand and elbow, either crashing into the messenger or falling when the building collapsed. He was soaking wet from the rain, and his clothes were covered in mud. This was not how he wanted to appear in front of his parents. Stavius stood in front of the ornate door to his parents' house and paused before raising the heavy brass knocker. He hadn't seen his family in years after being banished. Now he was limping to their residence, begging for a place to stay, while looking like, well, a beggar. He sighed and almost considered turning away and just telling Janice that they would have to sleep on the street. But he steeled himself and let the knocker clang against the door. A well-dressed, elderly gentleman opened the door and said, "There will be no begging here, young man. Please depart before I summon the constabulary." "Gilson, it's me," shouted Stavius, who recognized his parents' butler. "I know who you are, Staven," answered Gilson. "Let me repeat, remove yourself from these premises, or I will have you removed and jailed." "Who is at the door?" came a voice from the darkness behind Gilson. "Just a street beggar, ma'am," answered Gilson as he began to close the door. "Well, it is Lunafest, Gilson. Let us be generous and send him off with some food," answered the voice. An older woman appeared in the doorway beside Gilson. She was tall, slender, and had a regal bearing, even with minimal illusion. She was wearing a floor-length black dress, which was alluded to be utterly dark around her torso, except for a few twinkling sparks of light. It was like staring into the endless night sky, if it only had a dozen or so stars. She was Claritia Shriev Arburnus, Staven's mother. Claritia gave Stavius a condescending look and said, "Oh, it's you." Stavius squirmed a bit as his mixture of feelings towards his mother swirled in his mind, but blurted, "Hi, Mother, may I come in?" "You most certainly may not," proclaimed Claritia. "But I am curious. Why have you decided to crawl back here? What do you want from us?" "It's nice to see you too, Mother," spat Stavius. Anger had risen to be the champion over fear, embarrassment, guilt, and the myriad of other emotions which had been battling for his attention. In fact, I do have a request. I am in town for a few days with a friend and was hoping you would offer us a place to stay. Clarice was apparently taken aback by his request and replied, So, you've grown a spine. You surprise me. Tell me, have your magical abilities improved as well? No, ma'am, answered Stavius. He was not about to tell her about his ability to produce battle magic. Well, some things never change, she sighed in disgust. I assume that you're here for the festival, although I am surprised that it interests you. You're probably being dragged here by your friend. Who is he? Stavius did not want to share anything more about Janus or the reasons for his visit with his mother than necessary, so he lied. My friend is a girl, mother, but you are right that attending at the festival is her idea. We're not going to stay for the whole thing, though. We'll be leaving on Fives Day. A girl! Exclaimed Clarice in surprise. My, my, my! And where did you meet this poor creature? Does she know of your limitations? We met in Clothton, mother. She is not a poor creature, and yes, she knows everything about me, growled Stavius. He felt he needed to defend his girlfriend, even though Janus was neither his girlfriend nor even a girl. His mother knew how to hurt him with every remark she made. I should have guessed that you would flee to Clothton after that fiasco with the baby dragon, laughed Clarice. It sounds as though she is perfect for you. I'll tell you what, you two may stay in the shed for the next two nights, as long as all trace of you is gone by Fivesday morning. We are having guests over for a party that evening, and I will not tolerate having people like you around. Thank you, mother, said Stavius as graciously as he could through clenched teeth. You are most welcome, dear, answered Clarice with a wave of her hand. It is the charitable season, and our family is known for our generosity. This can be our wedding present to the two of you. There is, of course, no need to invite us to the wedding. Stavius just stared at his mother, but she stepped back inside, and Gilson had closed the door before he could formulate a response. Sleeping in the shed would be better than sleeping in the gutter tonight, but he seriously thought he would have chosen the street if there was no rain. He turned and began walking back to the fairgrounds to meet Janus. There were still a few hours before dusk, but the talisman tour should be returning soon. The rain had slowed to a steady drizzle by the time Janus's tour group returned, but Stavius was soaked to the skin. Janus laughed when he saw him and instantly regretted it when he saw Stavius's clenched fists. Dude, come over here and let me clean you up, he said. We have got to get you trained in magic. They stepped behind the tour booth, and with a wave of Janus's hand, Stavius was suddenly clean and dry, with an invisible rain shield over his head. Thanks, he muttered. I lost Larsa, but you'd better elude us to look different. I suspect she's still looking for us, and she's going to be mad. They went to a quiet cafe to have an early dinner and share what they'd learned. Janus wanted to meet Safe the Dragon as soon as he heard about their conversation, but accepted that they needed to wait until dusk. He was so impressed with Stavius's tale about evading Larsa and the destruction of the marketplace that he had him repeat the story several times. Janus was less impressed with having to sleep in a shed and with having to pretend to be a girl for two more days. Man, your family is messed up, dude, he said with a shake of his head. Janus's afternoon was much less exciting, but he had learned a lot of valuable information. He had visited five castles and seen five of the talismans. The Spear of Mars was located in Admin Castle, the castle nearest the fairgrounds, which was designed to look like a tree. The Ring of the Air was on display in Ringheld Castle, which was on the next hill to the west. Alburnus Castle held the Crown of Helios. Clivana Castle contained the Jewels of Luna, and the Necklace of Venus was stored in Farinod Castle. The tour did not include visits to Clarith or Mysa castles because they were just too far away. All of the talismans were on public display, with only a handful of soldiers guarding them. The public showcasing was due to the pride and arrogance of the seven families. There were no guards needed because reaching into the magical power stream surrounding the talismans would be fatal, and if you somehow could bypass the power stream, the talismans would explode with incredible force if they were ever removed. Any guards on site were merely there to prevent visitors from doing anything foolish. The boys chatted until the sun started to set and then wandered back over to the fairgrounds. The grounds officially closed at nightfall, but the boys convinced security to let them have one more look at the prisoners before it closed. There was almost no one there due to the late hour and the rain, so the guards agreed to give them 10 minutes. They raced over to the cage, and Narayana immediately threw a bucket of slop at Janus, who was disguised as a rotund, middle-aged woman. Stavius yelled, "Hey, Narayana, it's us!" And Narayana grunted, "We know." Janice said, "No worries, I had a shield up. Fool me once and shame on you. Fool me twice and shame on you." "Shame on you, Janice," yelled Versera. "Real fruits come out, but we can't get rid of your illusions, you creep." "Oh, sorry about that," Janice sheepishly said as he waved his hand and the stains on their dresses suddenly disappeared. "My mistake." Stavius interrupted to inform the girls that they had a plan to get them out. He wouldn't share it with them yet, but promised to explain it all tomorrow evening. They argued that they wanted to hear it now, but Stavius maintained that there wasn't enough time to divulge the details before the park closed. While this was true, the real reason was that they did not really yet have a plan. They were hoping to come up with one after talking to the dragon, but Stavius felt that this small lie was appropriate and necessary to keep them from committing suicide. The guards were waving at them from the booth, and the boys waved back before walking behind the prisoner's cage. Two eluded doppelgangers came out the other side and walked out of the park while the boys crouched behind the cage. The guards sat in their guardhouse and watched the illusions leave. They could see that there was no one in the fairgrounds and had made an executive decision to not go outside for rounds until the rain slowed. They extinguished the park lights and the boys crouched in the mud for several minutes, listening to nothing but the steady rain falling on the grass and the tin roof of the prisoner's cage. The boys finally crept over to the far side of the dragon aviary near Safe's cave. "Safe," Stavius thought, "it's dark and we're here. Come out and talk to us." There was no response, and after a few minutes, Stavius whispered to Janice, "I don't think she's coming." Janice replied, "I think you should turn around." Stavius turned around toward the cage and found himself staring into an eye as large as his head on a head which was larger than his entire body. Safe had emerged from her cave. "Dragons creep when necessary," thought Safe in her deep, rich voice. "We are the greatest hunters in the world, in the air, land, or sea." She crawled farther out of her cave, and the boys only heard soft squishing sounds and a slight rattling of the ancient chain connected to the heavy iron collar around her neck. "You are huge," thought Stavius, before quickly adding, "but it looks good on you." He didn't know whether female dragons were as concerned about their appearances as the girls at school, but he did know he didn't want to piss off a dragon. Safe snorted and thought, "I am malnourished, unexercised, and haven't had a bath in 100 years. I am nothing but a weak and frail shadow of myself. Do not fear to offend me, young one. Let me kill those families, especially the Admians, and I will be in your debt for eternity." "You may consider yourself scrawny, but Stavius is right," thought Janice. "You are still large and powerful. Why don't you just bust out of this cage? You are a fire breather, after all. Can't you just destroy these bars?" "Oh, how I wish I could," groaned Safe. "This cage is magically enhanced to dampen my powers. I am too weak to break this chain, and I cannot reach my collar. No, I am trapped and cannot even exhale a wisp of flame. Help me break this spell, and, although I will not be able to escape, I will gladly roast those viewing stands filled with the Septumculus elite. I may not have my freedom, but I will have my revenge." "Wow, Stavius! This bird has some seriously pent-up anger. Are you sure we want to let her out?" thought Janice. "You do know that I can hear your thoughts, don't you?" grumbled Safe in disbelief. She shook her head in disgust, causing rainwater to spray in every direction.
"Janice didn't mean anything by that," Stavius quickly thought.
He's just like that. He's a good guy, though." Then, in an attempt to guide the conversation in a safer direction, he thought, "But how can we disable the magic in your cage?" "By eliminating the magic in the entire area," answered Safe. "You need to remove the Admian talisman." "No way," thought Janice. "That might shut down the magic around here, but it would also kill whoever removed the talisman."
"Fools," Safe angrily thought.
"Those are simply lies spread by the family elders to protect their toys. Don't you think that the families would have a way to remove their precious treasures safely?"
"Oh, I suppose that would make sense," admitted Janice, somewhat embarrassed for not thinking of that himself.
"Do you know how to remove them?"
"Indeed I do," thought Safe, "but you will need some tools which will be difficult to obtain. You'll need a dragon gastrolith, but I'm afraid I cannot provide one."
Safe looked sad, then angry, then tired.
"I have an unhealthy quantity inside me, but I cannot cough them up."
The families forced them down my throat and clamped this neck ring on me so I cannot spit them out.
Stavius stared at the dragon and thought, that sounds cruel. Why would they do that? Safe looked at the first person to ever show her kindness and explained that this was the reason why she was being kept alive. She was being used to transform rocks into dragon stones. Someday, when her keepers felt she was ready, Safe would be slaughtered so that her gastroliths could be harvested and carved into yet more talismans. It's all about power, she concluded. That's all the families want. It's all they've ever wanted, and they don't care who or what is destroyed to get more.
The three of them stood in silence, contemplating the greed of the seven families and the suffering they caused.
Finally, Safe explained that while it was possible to remove a talisman from the energy stream, something needed to take its place in the temple receptacle quickly, or it would, as Janice was told, explode with unimaginable force. That something needed to be a dragonstone.
Stavius and Janice looked at each other and wordlessly agreed to tell Safe about their stones.
Safe, you should know that we actually have a pair of dragonstones, Janice began. But they were given to us, and we have no idea where they came from, Stavius quickly added. If we had known they were taken from an actual dragon, we would have refused them.
Then you would have been fools, thought Safe. But she was clearly suspicious. Show them to me.
The boys carefully took the stones out of their packs and set them on the ground before Safe. The dragon studied them for a moment before snorting. These are old, worn gastroliths. They are far too smooth to be useful for grinding food and were probably spit out years ago. At worst, whoever collected them violated a dragon's nest, but these could also have been simply found in the woods. Fear not, youngsters. You have committed no draconic crime, and these will serve our needs well, although they are unrefined and thus unlikely to last more than 10 minutes in the magic stream. You will need to move fast, and you will need a distraction if you plan to make the switch and avoid the guards during your escape.
Safe then taught the boys the secrets of how to remove the talismans from the magical power streams, and of how to turn the talismans off.
The talismans were each carefully crafted from multiple dragon stones into specific shapes which could absorb, retain, and release incredible amounts of magical power. However, they were unstable outside of the power streams and would explode within minutes unless they were, in effect, turned off. Once in this deactivated state, though, they would safely hold their charges for centuries while releasing a steady trickle of energy. So the theft would result in the Admian Temple exploding 10 minutes or so after the Spear of Mars was replaced with the Dragonstones. The explosion would damage Admian Castle and disrupt the surrounding magical pool, including the dampening field around Safe's cage. She would still be unable to break her chains, but could use her dragon fire to destroy the cage and, most importantly to her, to wipe out any members of the seven families in the viewing stands. Safe thought that Stavius should be the one to steal the talisman because his size and strength would help him with the guards, but both boys were emphatic that it should be Janice's task. Safe was unconvinced but had no choice but to accept their decision. You will need an exceptional diversion since you are too small to fight the guards, Janice, warned Safe. You should begin your plans now while I speak with Stavius.
No worries, laughed Janice. Creating annoying distractions and diversions is one of my special skills. I already have some ideas, but you're right. It will take all day tomorrow to set up, and I better start planning all the details right now.
Safe turned to Stavius and asked why he did not want to be the one to steal the talisman. This seemed like the more important role to her, and he appeared to be the best candidate. Stavius replied that his strength would be better used in saving his friends and asked Safe to protect them until the cage was disenchanted. His reasoning made sense to Safe, who assured him that, even as starved as she was, she had no desire to eat intelligent species and that she would protect the girls from the other dragons. She said, "But there's more. You had already decided this even while I was teaching you how to control the talisman. Janice paid close attention, but you simply followed along. Why do you not want to steal the talismans?"
"It's not that I don't want to steal them, Safe," said Stavius. "It's that I know I can't. I don't have any magical abilities beyond throwing lightning bolts and creating some shields, and I don't have much control over those either. I can't even create an illusion. How could I expect to control a talisman?"
"Those illusions and enchantments, which are so important to you humans, are just parlor tricks. Safe softly thought, you have a much more direct connection with magical energy. You're more like a dragon than a man. Stavius felt as though Safe had pierced his heart with a sword. All the painful memories of people claiming that he was more of a primitive animal than a human being flooded back into his mind. He had begun to feel better about himself and even thought that, with his newfound abilities since becoming enjoined, he might be able to master a few simple enchantments and have a chance to fit into society. Now he just heard a dragon say that she thought he was more animal than human. Well, maybe I am more of an animal than a man, but at least animals can control their magic. I bet that if I attempted to blast that collar off you, I'd probably kill you in the process. I tried to blow a hole in the fence this afternoon and wound up destroying an entire building.
Some of the energy goes where I want, but it sparks all over the place, Stavius lamented.
Wait, you were the one who destroyed that hideous structure? Safe gasped. I heard the explosion and saw a fall, but had no idea someone had caused it. You truly are more dragon than man.
Yeah, that's me, Beast Boy, sighs Stavius, who is struggling not to break down and cry. My visitor comes to a magical world only to join with the one person on the planet who is so much less than human that he can't perform magic.
Safe gently blew some hideous-smelling breath his direction and, although it was intended as a kind gesture, it caused Stavius to sputter and cough.
Sorry, muttered Safe. I also haven't been able to brush my teeth in 100 years.
Dragons brush their teeth? Asked Stavius in surprise. Well, we don't exactly brush, but we do try to gnaw on things like tree trunks to get the crud off. I don't get much of a chance to do that in here, though, sighed Safe.
Yeah, well, it's okay, replied Stavius. I'm just feeling sorry for myself. We should talk about how we're going to get the girls out of here.
Oh, that's easy, answered Safe. I can easily break apart the cage once it's disenchanted. The harder part is figuring out a way to escape.
Did you really destroy that building?
Yeah, but as I said, my aim is terrible. I also started a huge forest fire when I blasted some werewolves who were attacking us, says Stavius. I know what you're thinking, but I don't have precise enough aim to cut through your chains. I'm just a stupid animal.
Stop it with the stupid animal remarks, warned Safe. You completely misunderstand my remark.
Humans skim along the surface of the magical energy emanating from our world and use it for mundane tasks.
Few have any idea of the true power beneath their feet, and those that do resort to building artificial devices to attempt to harness it. Dragons and a few other higher beings, like squirrels, can tap directly into the world's energy and control it. Comparing you to a dragon is not an insult. It is the highest compliment a human could ever be given.
I have never heard of a dragon ever offering it before.
You are unique among mankind, and no one can ever know of your abilities.
Stavius was flabbergasted. But what do you mean that no one can ever know about me?
Look at how they captured and enslaved me to harvest my powers, spat Safe. Can you imagine what they would do to you if they knew of your ability to tap into magical energy directly? You would quickly find yourself a slave, chained in a windowless dungeon and forced to feed their dalliances with power.
Stavius collapsed onto the muddy ground, feeling nauseous as he realized the dragon's warning was valid. All these families wanted was power, and that was all he had. He couldn't control it, but that didn't matter. He would become nothing more than a power supply like the talismans.
Someday, with training, you will be able to focus and control your energy, but not in time to help me, sighed Safe. Now you would have to use a lens to focus your powers, and those are rare indeed.
What do you mean, a lens? Asked Stavius. Do you mean like a piece of polished glass, or do you mean something like a magic wand?
No, not glass, answered Safe, and I'm not sure what you mean by a magic wand.
A magic wand is like a stick that wizards wave around to help them cast spells, explained Stavius.
I suppose, thought Safe, that's certainly similar to what the unicorns do. Their horns act as lenses to focus their magic.
What if I had a unicorn horn? Stavius cautiously asked.
Safe glared at him. Dragons may cough up old gastroliths, but unicorns never shed their horns. The only way a human could have one would be from a murdered unicorn.
What if a unicorn gave them to us? Asked Stavius.
The dragon had stood up and Stavius was feeling nervous, even though she was on the other side of an enchanted cage.
That would never happen, roared Safe. Unicorns treasure the horns of their ancestors and would never desecrate their burial crypts. What have you done, Stavius?
Nothing. I swear I've done nothing, explained Stavius. Queen Esthera, Queen of the Unicorns, gave us two as parting gifts. She instructed us to use them to recharge the magic in our bodies and told us to keep the horns. I promised to find a way to recharge them and return them to her, but she wasn't interested. I swear I'm telling the truth.
Now I know you're lying, because no unicorn would ever do that, and Queen Esthera would never allow humans to enter Equus. I demand that you tell me the truth, roared Safe. This brought Janice out of his contemplations of how to steal a talisman, and he joined the conversation. The two boys quickly shared their adventure in Equus, how the unicorns had taught them how to communicate using their minds, how the queen had given them the horns, and how Ashdal and Manaron had carried them to the outskirts of Septumculus.
If what you say is true, then you did not just learn your telepathic skills, Safe wistfully said. The unicorns believe that their ancestors' horns are far more than storehouses of energy like dragonstones.
They think that those horns contain at least some of the essence of the mares who grew them. You might have inherited some of the spirit and abilities of Esthera's ancestors when you absorbed their power. Show me the horns.
Stavius and Janice reached into their packs and held the horns up for Safe to inspect.
These are useless in their current state, but they could direct your energy if they were recharged, Safe excitedly said. My sister Bellatrix could recharge them, but you'd have to leave first thing in the morning to reach her in time. I'll explain what you need to do, but first, tell me, what else is in those packs of yours?
Not much, really, answered Stavius, just a couple of old apples and my dirty clothes.
Give me those apples, commanded Safe.
I'm not sure that's such a good idea, warned Janice. They've been stuffed in there for days with Stavius's dirty underwear, and I just learned that he doesn't know how to do laundry.
Hey, I know how to wash clothes, retorted Stavius. I just can't magically make the dirt and stink disappear like some people.
I don't care, boys, growled Safe. Give me those apples.
Seriously, they are going to be pretty nasty after living next to my undies, warned Stavius in one last attempt.
I haven't eaten any fresh fruit in decades, and you've smelled my breath, rumbled Safe. Do you think that I'll mind if those apples smell a little bad? Throw them into my mouth now.
Janice and Stavius tossed the last of their fruit into Safe's gaping maw, and she shook with delight as she swallowed the tender morsels. Thank you, my friends, she purred. That was the tastiest treat I've had in 25 years. But Janice, please do zap Stavius's clothes. There was a skunky aftertaste so nasty that I can't even imagine how awful that backpack must reek.
The three of them laughed and felt better than they had all day. Janice promised to do Stavius's laundry and went back to his planning. Safe explained to Stavius what he needed to do to recharge the horns, and after another hour of discussion, the boys said goodnight to Safe and began walking home.
So you found us a place to stay, marveled Janice. Our tour guide thought I was crazy not having a room. He said that everything has been booked for weeks. Where and how did you find a room?
I'll tell you later, Janice, sighed Stavius, but trust me, you're going to love it.